That's not true, said Theo. We have never gotten along.
Think about it. Do you go home and rant about how much you hate Nim?
Theo hesitated. Even his locks looked like they were thinking.
Well, no.
It's just when you're around me. So next time you guys feel like killing each other, maybe take a break and go to your corners. Literally, just get away from me or each other.
Theo and Nim shared a skeptical glance.
See? Said Alia. You both think I'm nuts, so you have something to agree on already.
What will your people make of the attack on the museum? Diana asked.
I'm not sure, said Jason, his voice weary. There's a lot of bad stuff happening around the world right now. They'll probably chalk it up to terrorism, an attack on the Foundation because of its international policies. We've had threats before, problems at some of our facilities abroad.
But nothing on this scale, said Theo.
No, said Jason. Nothing with a body count.
And do we have any idea who those particular good guys were? Nim asked.
They were speaking German, said Theo. Ich bin ein blow the museum up.
Jason shuffled through a stack of files. There are a number of international organizations who make it their business to try to track the Warbringer's bloodline. There used to be more, but either they've gone to ground or just died out. There's the Order of St. Dumas and a splinter group called Das Erdbeben that once operated out of Hamburg. But it's hard to tell which are real and which are fiction.
Those bullets seemed awfully real, said Nim.
But why now? Asked Alia. Why wait until so close to the new moon to try to get rid of me?
Jason shifted uneasily in his seat and looked down at his hands.
I think that may be my fault. As long as it's not my fault, said Theo.
Alia waited, and Jason smoothed his thumb over the knee of his jeans.
Mom and Dad hadn't transferred a bunch of the old files to digital. I thought I should back everything up, make a record, so I scanned it all in.
On a Corralis Labs computer?
Theo said, sounding genuinely horrified for the first time since they'd started talking.
Were you even running encryption?
Yes, said Jason. And we have all kinds of confidential information on those servers. Research, proprietary data. It should have been safe.
But someone in the company could have recognized something, said Diana. All it would take was one word, one mention.
I'm sorry, Al, Jason said. He looked physically ill. I never really believed in all of it. Not the way they did. I should have been more careful.
Alia sighed. How could she be angry with him for something he couldn't possibly have understood? I don't know whether to smack you for being so stupid or do a victory dance to celebrate the fact that this time you're the one who screwed up.
You could incorporate a smack into your victory dance, suggested Nim.
Efficiency, said Alia. I like it.
Efficiency, Diana repeated thoughtfully. It's possible these organizations are exchanging information now. It would be the strategic thing to do. As near as I can tell from the scroll, tracking and identifying Warbringers was no easy task. The first recorded assassination of a Warbringer happened in the modern world. That can't be a coincidence.
One more thing to blame on the internet, said Theo.
Alia held up one of the folders. What about all the text that's been blacked out? Are there complete versions of the files anywhere?
Jason shook his head. Not that I've found. I think Mom and Dad may have been pursuing separate lines of research at some point. I'm not sure.
Theo refilled his glass.
Okay, we get to Greece, we find the spring, we're all good.
So they weren't going to run screaming. Alia could have hugged Theo, but that was pretty much always true.
Theo, this isn't your fight, said Jason. Or yours, Nim. I'm going to have Ben put us down at the abandoned landing strip near the airport in Araxos, instead of the airport in Kalamata. From there I can arrange for a flight back to—
Stop! Said Nim, holding her hands up.
If people are willing to blow a hole in the side of the Met to get to you, then they know who we are, and as soon as we pop back up on the grid, they'll be coming after us, trying to find out where you went. She makes a good point, said Diana. We can't afford to underestimate these people again.
All right, Jason said, considering. We'll find a safe house, someplace secure. You're going to find some olive grove to stash us in? Said Theo indignantly.
I was thinking a hotel, said Jason.
Forget it. If our roles were reversed, would you just sit around sipping ouzo while I was in danger?
No, conceded Jason.
Then I'm coming with you.
Me too, said Nim. Alia shook her head.
No way. You saw what we're up against. You could get hurt, maybe killed. I couldn't bear that.
I know, said Nim. It would be a terrible loss for you and the world, but you're my best friend. And honestly, I'd rather be shot at than spend a week in a hotel room with Theo.
Alia knew she should argue harder, tell them to hide out, do what Jason had suggested, make a real effort to ensure their safety. But despite the danger and their constant sniping, she wanted them with her. She and Jason had lost so much, and Theo and Nim had become their family, loving, supportive, and occasionally, completely insufferable.
Alia met Diana's eyes.
Can we keep them safe?
I don't know, Diana said honestly, and Alia felt grateful for that truth. But I'm not sure leaving them behind somewhere would be much better. If they were caught...
Diana didn't have to finish the thought. If Theo and Nim were caught, maybe it would be by one of the good guys. Or maybe it would be by one of the groups who didn't think twice about torture. Alia didn't like it, but they were out of real choices.
All right. You can come. But let's try not to do anything too stupid.
Nim reached out and gave Alia's hand a sharp squeeze. Don't ask Theo to make promises he can't keep. Maybe Alia's warning had gotten to him, or maybe Theo was just in a good mood, because all he did was grin and lift his ginger ale.
A toast, he said.
To the villains.
Chapter 17. Diana longed to wash the battle from her skin. The smell of smoke was in her hair, caught in the remnants of her gown. With every breath, she was pulled back to the chaos of the attack, the terrifying sight of bodies on the ground, the echoes of the war cry that continued to reverberate in her blood. Even though she still wasn't used to the feeling of being airborne, she forced herself to leave the reassuring solidity of the cushioned banquette and make her way back to the showers. She washed and changed into the leathers she'd stowed in her pack, looping the lasso at her hip. Diana would be conspicuous on the ground in Greece, but they'd be traveling quickly, and she felt more herself in Amazon clothing. If they faced another attack, she wanted any advantage she could get. For a while, she read through the files Jason had brought, keeping her back to the jet's window. She didn't like looking out into the dark and seeing her own face reflected back at her. She didn't want to think about the fact that she was hurtling through the air in a machine that mortals had constructed from metal and plastic, and what seemed to be an unwarranted optimism in their own innovation. If she'd been the one at the controls, it might have been different. But she did not like being in someone else's hands, no matter how reassuring Ben's manner and military experience might be. Eventually, her eyes grew heavy. Tucked into the plush seat, lulled by the sound of the engines, she managed to sleep. She dreamed that she was back on the battlefield that she'd seen in the Oracle's waters. She heard what she now knew was gunfire, saw the blackened ruins of an unknown city around her, the piles of bodies. But this time it was Tech who looked on as the jackal-headed beast tore out Diana's throat. Diana woke, gasping, hand clutched to her neck, still feeling the monster's long teeth lodged in her flesh. The jet's cabin was silent. How much time had passed while she slept? Light gleamed from beneath the drawn window shades, and Diana realized they'd caught up to the sun. Alia was curled next to Nim on the banquette, Theo across from them. Jason was in the back of the plane. When the girls had fallen asleep, Diana had seen Theo pour himself a drink that wasn't ginger ale. She said nothing, but she wondered if his behavior was out of habit, or fatigue, or something darker. Did he suspect his father's involvement in the attack? Could he be responsible himself? She didn't want to believe the worst of someone Jason and Alia cared about, and Theo's surprise and confusion about Alia's identity as the Warbringer had seemed genuine. but Diana didn't trust her instincts when it came to mortals and their deceptions. She felt like she was wandering in the dark through this world, catching only flashes of understanding, grasping one thing, then stumbling onto the next. Alia's eyes moved beneath her lids, and Diana wondered if she should wake her. The dream she was having did not look pleasant. Her brow was furrowed, and she clutched one of the file folders in her arms. Project Second Born. That had been the name Alia's parents had given to their research using Alia's blood. The majority of their information came from documents and artifacts passed down through the Corallis line, family legends, and the work of private investigators they'd hired to pursue leads on Helen's other descendants. There were photographs of archaeological sites, of private digs they'd funded at the locations of ancient battlegrounds, diving expeditions that ranged off the coast of Egypt to the depths of the Black Sea. They'd set up what seemed to be a secret division of Corallis Labs devoted to archaeogenetics, and though they'd begun their research looking for an answer to the problem of the Warbringer line, it was clear their minds had been engaged by the possibilities of what might be gleaned not only from Alia's biology, but from the DNA, or ADNA, of the heroes and monsters they had come to accept might be more than legend. Diana had flipped through page after page on the laptop screen. It had taken some getting used to, and her fingers still hungered for the feel of paper, but her mind was greedy for the information that flowed before her. One after another, the images slid by, covered in annotations. Achilles with his famous shield in hand, Hector gifting his sword to Ajax, Aeneas, Odysseus, Helen's brothers, the legendary Dios Kuroi. But there were other images, illustrations and models that had sent a chill skittering up her spine. The Minotaur with his great bull's horns in the labyrinth at Knossos. The sea monster Lamia, queen and child-eater. Six-headed Scylla, with her triple rows of shark's teeth. The cannibal giants of Lemos, the fire-breathing Chimera. What had the Corallises been tampering with? The files were troubling enough, but the gaps and missing pages worried her too. Now she looked at the screen filled with an image of Echidna, mother of all monsters, part woman, part snake. There were extensive notes on possible uses for gene therapy and the extraction of DNA, as well as a list of possible sites for Echidna's cave, where she was thought to have died. Diana shuddered. No wonder I had nightmares. Jason emerged from the back of the plane. Somehow he managed to look as formal in jeans and a t-shirt as he had in a suit. He retrieved two bottles of water from the bar and offered her one, then took the seat across the aisle from her and leaned forward, resting his elbows on his knees. He didn't look at her when he said, "I owe you an apology." He turned the bottle of water in his hands. "You put your life at risk to save Alia. All of us. We never would have made it out of the museum without you there." He paused, took a breath. "And I guess I should say that I'm sorry she was at the party in the first place. I'm trying to protect Alia. I'm trying to protect the Corallis name. I don't seem to be doing a good job of either."
"You're doing your best."
To her surprise, a slight smile tugged at his lips. "High praise." Diana couldn't help but smile herself.
"I'm sorry. I forget the way people coddle one another here."
Jason barked a laugh, then stifled it as Alia stirred in her sleep. "I'd hardly call it coddling."
"You made a mistake. You acknowledged it. I respect that. Mitigating the repercussions of those choices or their outcome would be a lie that served no one."
He leaned back in his seat and cast her a sidelong glance. "You're right, I'm just not used to people being that straightforward." Diana remembered Nim's description of Jason.
"Because you're rich and handsome?"
Now he grinned that startling, deep-dimpled smile. "Exactly." He gestured to the open laptop on the seat beside Diana. "My parents raised me on those stories. I thought that's all they were. Tales of gods and monsters and heroes."
"Heroes?
Theseus?
A kidnapper?
Hercules?
A thief?"
Jason's brows rose. "Well, you know what I mean. In the books, they're heroes." I think we were raised on different tales.
Maybe, he said. When I got older, I forgot those stories, and it was all about the comic books. Put on a cape, rescue the girl.
Which girl?
The girl. There's always a girl.
Diana snorted. We definitely grew up on different stories.
That grin again. Did you have a favorite? He asked.
Probably the story of Osimek, the double star.
I don't know that one.
It's not very exciting.
That wasn't true, but it also wasn't something she wanted to share.
There's another story I liked, one about an island, she said cautiously. A gift from the gods, given to their favored warriors, a place that could never be touched by bloodshed. I liked that story.
Now that's definitely fiction.
And there was that smug tone again. It made her bristle.
Why? Because no one can stop war entirely. It's inevitable.
In your world, maybe.
In any world. The problem isn't war. It's what humanity has made of it.
Diana folded her arms. I imagine all wars look the same to those who die in them.
But it's so much easier now, isn't it? Again, he gestured toward the laptop. In the old stories, war was a hero striding onto the battlefield with a sword in his hand. It was a monster to be vanquished. But now? It isn't even a general commanding armies. It's drones, nuclear stockpiles, airstrikes. Some guy can push a button and wipe an entire village off a map.
Diana knew those words and the horrors associated with them. She'd been schooled in all the ways mortals had found to destroy each other. You sound a little like my mother, Diana conceded. She says people find ways to make life cheap.
And death.
Are you afraid to die? Diana asked curiously.
No, said Jason. Not if I die well. Not if it's for something I believe in. My parents...
He hesitated.
Corallus Labs isn't just their legacy. As long as it thrives, their names live on, and they do too.
Jason really had taken the old stories and legends to heart. It was the way the ancient Greeks had viewed the afterlife. Being remembered is a kind of immortality.
Jason looked at her sharply, surprised. Exactly, he said. That's what I want for them.
And maybe for yourself?
Is that stupid? He asked. It was the first time she'd seen him look anything less than sure of himself. To want a chance at greatness?
Diana didn't think it was stupid at all. But before she could say so, Ben's voice came over the speaker.
We've entered Greek airspace and are beginning our descent. We should be on the ground in Araxos in about 20 minutes. I'm expecting a bumpy landing, so please do buckle up and keep your prayer beads handy.
Whatever spell had been woven in the sleepy cocoon of the jet had been broken. Jason shifted, his expression shuddering.
Not long now.
Alia and the others stretched and yawned. Nim hardly looked like herself in her Corallus Labs sweatsuit, her face scrubbed free of makeup. Theo smacked his lips and ran a hand over his crest of dark hair. He still wore his shiny suit trousers, but he'd abandoned the jacket and tie for a Corallus t-shirt. Are we there? Alia asked, voice muzzy with sleep.
Almost, said Jason. What happens when we land? Asked Theo, abandoning the banquette to plunk himself down in a seat and strap a seatbelt across his lap.
Ben will put us down near Araxos. We'll have to find someone to drive us south, but from there it's only about 4 hours by car to Therapne. It would have been faster to set down in Kalamata, but I was worried about landing at such a busy airport.
Still, said Alia, we'll be at the spring in a matter of hours.
Her gaze met Diana's, and Diana felt a spark of excitement pass between them. She stretched and wiggled her jaw, trying to ease the uncomfortable pressure in her ears.
Never been on a plane before? Asked Jason.
No, I... Suddenly, an alarm blared through the cabin. Nim clutched Alia's arm.
What is that? Get in your seats, both of you. Now, Jason ordered.
What's happening? Said Nim as they threw themselves into the row behind Theo.
We have a problem, Ben said over the speaker, an edge to his measured voice.
The jet is equipped with an early warning system, said Jason. Someone's firing on us?
Theo said incredulously.
I don't suppose we can fire back,
asked Alia.
Jason gripped the armrests. We don't have that particular upgrade. Deploying flares, Ben said.
Diana shoved up the window shade. She heard a thunk, and in the glare of the afternoon sky, she saw two bright bursts of light followed by trails of white smoke. She glimpsed something shooting toward the flare on the left, and then, boom.
The little jet shook and tilted wildly.
Theo swore. Alia shouted. The jet righted itself. The flare had drawn off the missile, but the alarm was still sounding.
Jason tore his seatbelt from his lap and lunged toward the back of the plane, emerging seconds later with what Diana realized were parachute packs. She'd seen them on the bodies of downed pilots.
You can't be serious, said Alia, eyes bright with panic.
Put it on, commanded Jason, shoving a pack at her. You've jumped out of a plane before.
For your stupid 18th birthday,
Alia said, but she was already reaching for the straps. Listen to me, he said as he hurled packs at Nim and Theo and shoved another at Diana. Get your goggles on. We're at about 10,000 feet. As soon as we get below 7,000, we're going to jump. We go 5 seconds apart. Count it out so you don't crash into each other.
I'm a deuce, said Theo.
What about you? Said Alia.
Ben has a pack in the cockpit. We'll go in tandem. As soon as you jump, I want you to get stable and belly down, then deploy the main canopy. Try to face upwind and be prepared to duck and roll when you hit the ground.
This isn't happening, said Nim, wriggling into the parachute harness.
It is, Alia said, and Diana was struck by the steadiness in her voice.
But we're going to be okay.
Liar, moaned Nim.
Optimist, countered Alia.
There was fear in her eyes, but somehow she forced a smile. Stay where you are once we're on the ground, said Jason. The packs have trackers in them. He touched Diana's shoulder briefly. I'll find you.
A loud clang sounded, and the jet shuddered slightly.
What the hell was that? Said Theo, pulling his legs through the straps of the harness.
Diana looked up at the roof. There's something on the jet.
They heard a metallic clatter above them.
Are those foot?
Alia said, and then her words were lost as the jet's door was torn open. A thunderous roar filled the cabin. The rest of them were strapped into their seats, all but Jason. In the space of a breath, Diana felt the pack torn from her hands. She saw Jason's eyes widen.
No!
She cried. She reached for him, but it was too late. The force of the vacuum lifted him like a doll and sucked him into the waiting sky. Alia was screaming. Theo and Nim were shouting. Diana looked at where Jason had stood a bare moment before. There, and then gone. Two men in black battle armor swung through the hole they'd torn in the plane's side, cables attached to their backs, and stalked toward them. Diana wrenched free of her seatbelt and hurled herself at the armored men. They tumbled backward, perilously close to the open door. She felt a pistol pressed tight to her side, and one of the soldiers unloaded his clip. She screamed as her organs ruptured, the bullets tearing through her, and for a moment the world went black. The soldier on top of her pushed the barrel of his gun against her skull. Diana wasn't sure what she could survive, and she didn't intend to find out. She unleashed a howl of rage and broke his hold, shoving at him with all her strength. He shot upward and struck the roof of the jet, then crumpled in a heap. Diana pulled herself to her feet, clutching her side, and her blood turned to ice. The other soldier had Alia in his arms. He leapt from the plane as the wind caught Alia's cry.
Oh, no, you don't, snarled Diana.
She grabbed the lasso from her hip, wedged herself against the ragged metal side of the door, and cast the rope after the soldier with all the force she could muster. It shot downward in a gleaming arc, a lash of golden fire against the blue sky. The loop closed over Alia and the soldier, snapping tight as Diana yanked back hard. The soldier's head connected with the lip of the door as he was pulled back into the plane. He and Alia toppled inside, but his body was limp. Nim and Theo fell on them, drawing Alia close as she clawed at the lasso, trying to get away from the soldier. Diana gave a shake of the knot, and it slithered loose. She leaned against the wall of the jet, panting. She could feel her body healing, a cool, crawling sensation that rippled over her flesh. The wound at her side had closed, but she was still reeling from the pain, from the wet feel of her own blood on her fingers. At least the bullets had gone clean through. At that moment, the wail of the alarm picked up speed.
Incoming, Ben's surprisingly calm voice noted over the speaker.
The plane banked hard left. They tumbled against the seats. A sound like a thundercrack split the air, and the jet quaked with a cacophonous boom. A strange quiet descended as the alarm and the engines went silent. For a moment, they were in freefall. Then one of the jet's engines roared to life, and Ben pulled them out of the dive.
Kids, it is time to exit the aircraft in an orderly fashion, he said over the radio. I will not be setting this bird down.
Diana dragged herself to her knees, pulling Alia up with her.
Go.
You don't have a parachute, Alia began.
Ben appeared in the cockpit doorway, a pack strapped to his shoulders. We can go together, said Ben. I'll take her.
Another clang sounded above them, footsteps racing toward the door. Who were these men? How were they doing this?
All Diana knew was they were determined to see Alia dead.
We only have one chance, said Diana. I'll block them, you all get out, no arguments. Ben, get behind me with the others.
Ben cocked a pistol. With all due respect, ma'am, a SEAL doesn't hide behind a lady's skirts.
A flood of soldiers dressed in black poured through the door.
Now!
Diana shouted. She and Ben rushed the soldiers. She heard gunfire, felt the sear of a bullet grazing her thigh, and then she was grappling with one man, two. These soldiers were strong, better equipped and better trained than those she had faced at the museum. Maybe Alia's foes had realized what they were up against. The pain in Diana's side was slowing her movements, but all that mattered was getting Alia and the others clear. She allowed herself a swift glance at the door and saw Nim leap with a shriek and vanish from view. Theo must already be gone. Alia met Diana's eyes, touched her fist to her heart. Sister in battle. Then she squeezed her eyes shut and jumped. Diana grunted and seized a wide wrist, felt bones splinter, kicked hard. The soldier screamed and collapsed, but another soldier was already at her back, grabbing her arms. In horror, Diana saw Ben slumped against the banquette, eyes blank and staring, his chest riddled with holes. Apparently, courage couldn't stop bullets, even for a SEAL. Two soldiers had hold of her now, yanking her wrists behind her. One of them drove a fist into the still tender wound at her side, and she screamed as pain exploded through her, stealing her breath.
Heard about you, said one of the soldiers from behind his black helmet, advancing on her with a notched knife in his hands. Heard you can take a bullet. Let's see how you do when I carve the heart out of your chest.
From the corner of her eye, Diana glimpsed movement, but her mind refused to believe what she was seeing. Someone was clinging to the wing of the plane. Jason was clinging to the wing of the plane. Impossible. No mortal had that kind of strength. But as she watched, he pulled himself over the side and launched himself back into the jet. He slammed into the helmeted soldier, knocking his knife free, and with one swift gesture, snapped his neck.
It can't be.
The soldiers reached for their guns and took aim at Jason. Diana seized them and threw them hard against the walls of the jet. They slumped to the floor. For a moment, she and Jason stared at each other, the jet shaking as it plummeted toward the earth.
You lied to me,
she shouted over the roar of the wind. Jason bent and pulled the parachute from Ben's back, looping it over his own shoulders.
No more than you lied to me, he offered his hand. Is it worth dying over?
Diana took his hand. He yanked her close.
Hold tight, he said.
And then the sky had them. Chapter 18. The terror of the fall came at Alia like a wave. The world rushing up to meet her, her brain trying to remember everything about skydiving at Jason's birthday party, and instead spitting out a list of the bones in the human body. Every bone she was about to break. The details of the earth grew clearer, in green, gray, brown, ridges and shadow, clusters of trees. Her fingers fumbled over the latches and bits of metal at her shoulders. Her body felt heavy, impossibly awkward as she tried to hold the position Jason had described. Jason. She saw the wind grab him, hurl him from the jet. It had happened so fast. A hard fist of despair pressed at her chest, fear and sorrow and disbelief tangling together inside her. The wind and the pounding of her heart filled her ears. All of that tough talk about Diana killing her for the sake of peace, and the only thought in her head, I do not want to die. She grabbed hold of the toggle at her hip and yanked hard. A whirring sound. She'd pulled the wrong cord. For a moment she was sure of it, certain she'd made some horrible blunder. Then her body was yanked upward with a hard jolt. A choked sound between a sob and a bleat escaped her lips as the harness dug into her thighs and her momentum slowed. She was pretty sure she'd left her shoulders and pelvis somewhere above. She forced herself to scan the terrain. She knew she needed to try to find somewhere flat and treeless and steer into the wind. She pulled gently at the toggles, testing them. The world looked alien and mysterious beneath her. Her mind registered barns, houses, cultivated land. She needed a field, someplace flat. She tugged gently at the toggles, turning left, then right, trying to slow her descent. One moment she was gliding over the shine of a river, and in the next the earth was too close, speeding by beneath her. She lifted her feet and hit the ground with a painful thud, then tumbled forward, unable to control her momentum. She felt her ankle twist, felt rocks scrape along her back and sides. She tucked her knees and rolled. The canopy caught the wind, dragging her along, then finally collapsed. She skidded to a halt. Alia lay on her side, trying to catch her breath, trying to make her rational mind catch up to the adrenaline coursing through her body. She batted at the latches and straps of her harness and wriggled free. Her left ankle throbbed. She could only hope it wasn't broken. She forced herself to sit up, but every part of her felt like a jello mold that hadn't quite set. She was at the base of a terraced hillside covered in tarps and netting to prevent erosion. She heard a shrill whir and peered up into the sky, saw a trail of smoke, the jet spiraling downward. It disappeared behind a rise of hills, and Alia heard a loud boom that shook the earth beneath her. A scream rose in her throat as a plume of black smoke blossomed from the horizon. She glimpsed a shape moving through the sky, the translucent bowl of a parachute trailing behind it. Could it be Diana? Ben? One of their attackers? Alia struggled to her feet. Jason had said there were trackers in the packs. Jason.
Alia!
Nim's voice. Alia had never heard a more beautiful sound. She turned, saw Nim stumbling toward her, and forced herself to stand. They staggered the rest of the distance to each other, and Alia threw her arms around Nim, wishing she could hold her close and keep her safe forever.
Did you see where Theo came down? Alia asked.
No, said Nim. It all happened so fast. Alia felt panic swelling up to choke her breath.
Let's get to the top of the hill, she said. Maybe we can see more.
Alia leaned on Nim, and they scrambled past the tarps and netting as fast as their wobbly legs would carry them. When Alia looked west, she could make out a sapphire strip of sea. To the east, she saw only farmland.
There,
she said, pointing to where the parachute was sailing toward the earth, near what might be a grain field. It had to be Ben and Diana. It had to be. They stumbled down the other side of the hill, Alia limping slightly, trying to walk the pain out of her ankle as Nim rolled the sleeves of her Corrales t-shirt up over her shoulders. It was late afternoon, but the sun above was strong. Alia wanted to slump down right there, cover her head with her hands, and just scream. She couldn't stop seeing Jason's face as he vanished through the jet door. Keep going, she told herself. Just keep moving. If you stop, you'll have to think. They rounded an overgrown hedge, and she thought she heard voices. Nim's head snapped up.
That sounds like...
It can't be, said Alia, but she would have known her brother's voice anywhere, especially when he sounded angry.
I don't owe you an explanation, Jason spat. You've been lying and dodging my question since the moment we met. No ordinary man could do what you did, came Diana's reply.
Alia stepped around the hedge and saw Diana pacing back and forth in a field spotted with poppies as Jason lay on the ground trying to untangle himself from a mess of parachute cords. He was alive. He was okay. She didn't care how or why, just that it was so.
Help me out of this thing, he said to Diana. Help yourself, Diana shot back.
Alia exchanged a glance with Nim. We interrupting? She asked. Jason and Diana turned and saw her at the same time.
Alia,
they shouted. Diana loped toward her and swept Alia up in her arms, swinging her around like a little kid.
You made it!
She threw an arm around Nim's shoulders and pulled them both into a hug.
You made it.
Jason gave a frustrated growl and said, Would someone please help me out of this thing so I can hug my damn sister? Alia limped over to him, tears in her eyes, and said, Yes, I'll help, you big grump. He dragged her down and hugged her tight.
I thought I'd lost you.
Same here.
Are you getting snot all over my shirt?
Probably, she said, but she didn't let go.
How the hell did you get down here?
Jason sighed.
It's a long story. I'll tell you all of it, but we need to go. Whoever shot us down will have people on the ground, searching.
Did Ben get out before the plane went down? Nim asked.
Jason shook his head.
No.
He died bravely, said Diana.
But he died just the same, Alia replied.
Another death on her conscience, and all the more reason to make it to the spring. After a few minutes of fiddling, they managed to get Jason free, though Diana kept her distance, arms crossed, jaws set. He pulled a Velcro patch free from one of the straps of the parachute pack, revealing some kind of screen. His fingers moved over it, entering a code, and a cluster of green dots appeared beside an electronic compass rose.
That's us, said Jason, using his fingertips to zoom out.
Another green dot appeared to the southeast.
And that's Theo, said Alia. Or his parachute, at least.
She punched Jason hard in the arm.
Don't say that.
They followed the signal through the poppy field into an olive grove, through row after row of gnarled trees. In the late afternoon light, their gray-green leaves took on a silvery cast, like boughs clustered with clouds of seafoam. Nim stopped short.
Oh, God, she said.
And when Alia followed her horrified gaze, she saw Theo's limp body hanging from the twisted branches of an olive tree, like a puppet gone slack on its strings.
No, said Alia. No.
She had done this. She might as well have snapped his neck herself. Then one of Theo's pointy shoes wiggled, his knee, his thigh, up to his wrist. Alia grabbed Nim's arm, relief gusting through her.
He's alive, she said on a happy gasp.
I should have known I couldn't get rid of him that easily, said Nim, but she was smiling. Diana peered at Theo's wiggling form.
What exactly is he doing?
Jason sighed.
I'm pretty sure he's doing the wave.
Alia cocked her head to one side.
Maybe the robot?
Diana frowned.
Is this the way your people celebrate cheating death?
What exactly are you doing, Theo?
Alia called. He tried to twist against the strings to no avail.
Alia?
He shouted.
Guys?
His feet bicycled futilely through the air. He was only a few feet off the ground, but it was a crucial few feet.
He looks like a manic Christmas ornament, said Nim. And God, who told him those pants were a good idea?
Personally, Alia thought the pants were great. Was it wrong to notice how good someone's butt looked when a second earlier you'd thought he was dead? It took only a few moments for Diana to scale the tree and cut Theo loose. He fell to the ground in a heap and gazed up at them from the dirt.
Can we never, ever do that again?
Sold,
Jason said, offering him a hand. He pulled Theo up and drew him into a quick hug, clapping him on the back. Alia wanted to plant kisses all over Theo's ridiculous face, but she was going to have to fall out of a few more planes before she had the guts to do it.
How did they find us? Said Nim. How did they know we were headed to Greece?
I don't know, said Jason. It's possible they found the jet via satellite. Maybe they were just waiting to see where we intended to land, and once we were in range,
they took a shot,
said Theo.
They'll have seen where the jet went down, said Diana. We need to move. If they don't already know we escaped the crash, they will soon.
But where are we? Said Nim. And where do we go?
Theo pulled out his phone.
Don't!
Said Alia, swatting it out of his hands onto the ground.
Hey!
Maybe that's the answer to how they found us, said Nim. Theo looked almost insulted.
You seriously think I let anyone track me through this thing? If anybody goes looking for Theo Santos, they're going to think I'm sunning myself on Praia do Toque, which, honestly, I wish I was.
I wish you were, too, said Nim.
Does anyone else have a phone? Said Jason. Nim shook her head. It was in my clutch at the party.
I never got a new one, said Alia. And Diana doesn't have a phone.
Theo clutched his chest.
No phone? How do you function?
Diana cast Theo a haughty glance that looked like it had been pulled straight from Nim's playbook. I wear practical shoes and avoid the branches of olive trees.
So cold, said Nim with a grin. So accurate.
Shh, Theo said to his pointy-toed shoes.
She didn't mean it.
Just keep the phone off for now, Jason said.
Fine, Theo retorted. But for a guy who knows so much biology, you don't know shit about tech. This thing is literally untraceable.
In the end, Diana led them southeast, the setting sun to their backs. They made their way through olive groves and farmland for hours, lurching along, lost in their own thoughts. They kept away from the roads and left a wide perimeter as they skirted farms and houses, keeping Theo at the front of the line and Nim at the back, since they didn't seem to be able to stop insulting each other, regardless of the danger. Alia still caught them throwing angry glares each other's way. Occasionally, Diana or Jason would jog ahead to scout their route, and it was nearly dusk when Diana returned to say they were on the outskirts of an area called Thinis.
Do you think we've gone far enough? Asked Alia.
She refused to complain, but her feet ached and her whole body felt weary with fatigue. Though her ankle was obeying, she was desperate to take her weight off it for a while.
Even if we aren't, it's getting too dark to see, said Jason. We need to find shelter for the night.
I don't think we should risk seeking lodging, said Diana. I saw what looks like an abandoned building not far ahead.
How are you not tired? Said Nim grumpily.
Alia smiled. She'd almost gotten used to Diana's limitless reserve of energy.
Annoying, isn't it?
They followed Diana through another mile of orchards and across a dry creek bed, where the stones glowed nearly white in the gathering dusk, then back into another olive grove. Through the trees, Alia occasionally caught sight of lit windows or the shape of a building. Once they passed close enough to a house that she glimpsed a television through the window, flickering blue in the living room. She felt like she'd looked through a portal to another planet. How could something so ordinary be happening when they were running for their lives? She was glad when they left the cultivated groves and began picking their way up a low rise, through a tangle of dense trees and scrub that provided plenty of cover. Eventually, they came to a building that looked like it had once been a chapel, but had long since been abandoned. They'd almost missed it, tucked into a copse of cypress and deadfall. Hopefully, the men looking for them would head straight for the neighboring farms and never think to seek them out here. Alia felt along the wall near the door and found a small lantern hanging from a rusted hook.
It still has oil in it, she said.
A few more minutes of fumbling and they'd found safety matches in a tin box tucked into a niche in the wall.
Keep the flame low, Jason said.
Alia lit the wick and turned the little bronze key as low as it would go. By the dim light, they could see whitewashed walls reaching up to a blue enamel dome and a packed earth floor beneath them. Rusted hulks of farm equipment and piles of rotting pews had been stacked haphazardly in the apse, but there was still plenty of room.
We can spend the night here, said Jason.
We're far enough from the farmhouses, said Diana.
I think so.
And we're stopping for the day?
Yes.
Good, she said.
In a single movement, she freed the lasso from her hip and slung it over Jason's shoulders.
Then what exactly are you, Jason Corrales?
Chapter 19.
Diana snapped the lasso tight, and for a moment its fibers seemed to glow in the dim light of the church. Jason stumbled but kept his footing, thrashing at the end of the rope like a fish on a line. Despite what she'd seen on the jet, the reality of his strength still came as a shock.
Diana!
Alia yelped.
Oh, dang, said Theo. What is that thing made of?
Said Nim. Diana ignored them.
Who are you?
She demanded.
What are you?
I'm exactly who I said I am, Jason said through gritted teeth.
How did you catch hold of the jet's wing at those speeds? How did you hang on? What are you, Jason Corrales? Speak!
Jason gave an angry growl, his muscles flexing, the tendons in his neck drawn taut. But he was no match for the lasso's power.
What's happening to him?
Theo asked, a frantic edge to his voice.
What are you doing?
He's fine, said Diana, though she wasn't entirely sure that was so.
The lasso compels the truth.
Jason grimaced.
I am a descendant of Helen and Menelaus, just as Alia is.
Of course he was. He was Alia's brother, but that didn't account for his abilities.
Another warbringer?
Something else. He spoke the words as if they were being torn from him.
I carry hero's blood. The blood of Menelaus and the Spartan kings before him. My mother and father helped me keep my strength secret.
Why didn't you tell us? Alia said. Diana could sense the worry she had for her brother, but the hurt in her voice was clear, too.
Mom and Dad didn't want anyone to know, said Jason. It was dangerous for all of us.
You held back when we fought at the hotel, Diana said as realization dawned.
I've been holding back my whole life, Jason snarled. Now get this thing off me.
Let him go, Alia said. This is wrong. Diana narrowed her eyes but let the rope slacken. Jason pulled it over his head, casting the lasso away from him like a snake.
What the hell is that thing?
Diana yanked the lasso back. A necessity in the world of man? You've been lying this whole time to all of us.
And you've been so forthcoming? He pointed an accusing finger at her. You come out of nowhere. You shrug off bullet wounds like they're paper cuts. You can outfight my best security guards.
I've made no attempt to hide my gifts, Diana replied. The secrets I protect do not just belong to me.
You think that lets you off the hook?
Jason made a sound of disgust and stalked through the chapel door. He looked back once over his shoulder.
If you want the truth so damn much, maybe you should think about offering it in return.
He vanished into the dusk. Alia moved to follow, but Theo laid a hand on her shoulder.
Maybe give him a minute. If there's one thing Jason hates, it's feeling out of control.
You shouldn't have done that, Alia said to Diana. You shouldn't have used that thing on him. Diana coiled the rope at her hip, using the time to quell some of her anger. Alia was right. Maybe Jason was right, too. But he was also a hypocrite. The whole time he'd been badgering her for information, he'd been keeping his strength a secret.
Well, said Theo into the silence, I guess now I know why he always wrecked me at basketball.
Alia cast him a skeptical glance. I've seen you play basketball, Theo. He beat you because you're terrible.
With great dignity, Theo stated, I'm good on the fundamentals.
Nim hooted, and I'm the queen of the Netherlands. She glanced in the direction Jason had gone. It kind of makes sense, though. Alia, has Jason ever been sick a day in his life?
Alia shook her head slowly.
No, never missed a day of school, never took a day off work. I thought he was just,
I don't know, Jason being Jason, like a cold wouldn't dare be caught by him.
Also, his sweat smells like pine cones, said Nim. Alia's gaze snapped to her.
What?
Nim blushed and shrugged.
Why do you think I liked his dirty t-shirts so much? He smells like a sexy forest.
Jason did have a pleasing scent, almost better than new car, but Diana didn't intend to discuss it. Alia gagged.
You're disgusting.
I'm honest, Nim said with a sniff.
Well, there's no way I'm going to stop giving him crap about his cologne, said Theo.
It was almost fully dark now. Diana sighed. It would be best if Jason didn't stray far.
I'll go, Theo said.
Great idea, said Nim. Maybe you can find a ditch to fall into.
Alia pulled the parachute tracking screen from her pocket. Here, she said, handing it to Theo. The screen is pretty bright. You can use it as a flashlight.
I wish I could use it as a sandwich. Next time we throw ourselves out of a plane, remind me to grab a bag of pretzels.
Alia pointed toward the grove. We have olives and also olives.
Maybe we can cook and eat Nim, he grumbled as he headed out the door.
Nim ran a hand through her black hair.
I would be delicious.
Diana considered offering to go after Jason instead of Theo, but she knew she wasn't quite ready to apologize, and she doubted he was ready to hear it. Besides, someone needed to remain with Alia. At least there was one apology she could make and mean. I'm sorry I lost my temper, she said quietly. Alia blew out a long breath. I'm mad at him too, she said. I'm just so glad he's alive I'm having trouble staying mad. Maybe that was part of what Diana resented, that horrible moment of watching Jason vanish, of believing he'd been lost for good. She thought of the soldiers they'd left behind on the jet, of Gemma Rutledge, someone she'd never met, a blonde girl in a party dress lying dead beside Nim. She thought of Ben's chest pocked by bullet holes. She'd never known someone who had died. She'd barely known Ben, and yet she felt the weight of loss pressing down on her, all that courage and easy humor gone forever. Jason was right. Death was too easy here. They bedded down against the cold, packed earth. Eventually, Theo returned with word that Jason would take the first watch.
Let him sulk, he said with a shrug, curling onto his side a short distance from Nim and Alia.
Diana wasn't quite ready to trust Theo. Once the others were breathing deeply, she slipped out of the chapel and crept silently through the trees and underbrush until she spotted Jason's shape in the dark. His back was to her, his head tilted up at the stars. He looked like a figure carved in stone, a statue of a hero, still standing as everything around him fell to ruin. Or maybe just a lonely boy keeping watch with the stars. What had it been like for him to hide the truth of himself, even from his best friend, his sister? Diana didn't ask. Without a sound, she turned and made her way back to the chapel. She lay down beside Alia and let herself fall into a deep, dreamless sleep. Jason woke her sometime after midnight. He said nothing, and wordlessly Diana left to take up the watch as he bedded down on the chapel floor. The hours passed slowly with nothing but her thoughts and the ceaseless buzz of the cicadas to keep her company. But at last the sky began to brighten, and gray dawn light spilled across the grove below. Diana made her way back to the chapel, eager to begin the day's journey. She pushed open the decaying door and saw Alia sleeping peacefully on her side, Jason on his back, brow creased as if expressing disapproval, even in his dreams. And Nim crouched on top of Theo, her hands locked around his throat. Theo was clawing at her arms, his face red with suffused blood. Nim, she shouted. The girl turned her head, but the thing looking back at her was not Nim. Her eyes were hollows, her hair a mane of star-strewn night, and from her back sprang the filthy black wings of a vulture. The image flickered and was gone. Diana launched herself at Nim, knocking her off Theo and rolling with her over the chapel floor.
What's going on? Jason said blearily as he and Alia came awake.
But Theo was already shoving to his feet, coughing and gasping. He roared and rushed at Diana and Nim. In a heartbeat, Jason leapt up and seized Theo's arms, holding him back.
Stop, he commanded. Stop it.
Theo thrashed in his grip.
I'll kill that little bitch.
You should have died in the crash,
shouted Nim, hissing and spitting as Diana attempted to restrain her without hurting her.
You shouldn't even be here. You're as worthless as your father says.
Theo snarled.
Fat, ugly, stupid c-.
Jason snagged Theo's jaw in his hands and clamped it shut, silencing him forcibly.
Shut your damned mouth, Theo.
Diana hauled Nim off her feet and slung her over her shoulder, hearing the breath go out of the tiny girl in a disgruntled woof. At least she couldn't keep shouting insults. But Nim did not cease her snarling and struggling until they were several hundred yards away in a stand of cypress trees. Diana dumped her onto the scraggly grass.
Nim, said Alia, coming up behind them. What the hell?
Nim panted. She unballed her fists, a look of horror dawning on her face. Her shoulders slumped, and she burst into tears.
I wanted to kill him. I tried to kill him.
Alia met Diana's gaze. It's getting worse, isn't it? Diana nodded. Maybe the terror of the past few days had made Theo and Nim more susceptible to Alia's power, or maybe it was simply the coming of the new moon. Only one thing was certain. They were running out of time.
We have to find some way to keep them separated, said Alia.
You're not leaving me here, Nim said, wiping the tears from her eyes. Alia offered her a hand.
That wasn't what I was suggesting, you nerd.
But we have to do something before you guys murder each other.
We'll just have to try to keep them apart as much as possible, said Diana.
Being near you helps, Nim said. Alia's brows rose. Are you saying that because you enjoy being carried like a sack of flour by a cute girl?
Nim planted her hands on her hips.
I'm serious. As soon as she separated me from Theo, I could feel my mind start to clear. It just took a little while for the rest of me to catch up.
It's possible, said Diana. Remember how you were healthier when you were near me on the island?
Okay, said Alia, but we have to watch them. I'm not going to be responsible for my friend's killing.
Diana caught a flicker of movement from the olive grove below.
Silence, she whispered. There were dark shapes moving through the trees. They were still far enough away that Diana could just make them out, but they were drawing closer, and Diana could only whisper a prayer of thanks that they hadn't overheard her conversation with Alia and Nim. She needed to be more cautious. They all did. Diana gestured for Alia and Nim to follow, and as quietly as they could, they traced their steps back to the chapel.
Maybe they're not looking for us? Nim murmured.
Yeah, whispered Alia. They're probably going to use those guns to shoot the olives off the trees.
Theo and Jason were seated near the entry. Theo's eyes narrowed as they drew closer, but Diana laid a hand on his shoulder and some of the tension in his body seemed to ease.
There are armed men approaching the chapel, she said.
Jason was on his feet instantly.
Damn it, he said. We need to get out of here.
We need a car, said Alia.
Jason shook his head. What if they're watching the roads?
He's right, said Diana. They may even have set up roadblocks. We'd be better off continuing on foot until we can get farther from the crash site.
They did their best to hide the evidence of the night they'd spent in the chapel and hurried down the south slope of the hill, keeping away from the main highway, scurrying over fields that offered little cover, through orchards, where they plucked their breakfast from the trees, and past a scrubby pasture where a scrawny goat bleated furiously at them as they passed. In a small backyard, they found a clothesline strung with damp laundry, and Nim and Theo exchanged their Corallus Labs shirts for a linen undershirt and a bright blue button-down. The previous night, they'd tacked east, but now they moved back toward the coast, where campers and beachgoers might provide some camouflage for their oddly dressed crew. At one point, they crested a series of low ridges, and Diana caught a view of the bright waters of the Ionian Sea. The blue was more like her home waters than the sullen slate of the Atlantic, but it was still nothing compared to the coast of the Mascara. She was closer to home than she'd been since she crossed into the world of man, and yet she'd never felt farther away. As they looked out at the water, Diana was startled to hear Nim say,
"Sorry about this morning, Theo."
Theo kept his eyes trained on the sea.
I'm sorry I called you names. You're not fat or ugly.
Nim cut him a glance.
I am fat, Theo, and far too hot for your sorry ass.
A smile flashed over Theo's face.
I think you mean my worthless ass.
Diana couldn't help but respect their willingness to set their anger aside. She knew those insults must have stung. They continued on, keeping as much distance as they could between Theo and Nim, without losing sight of each other,
just in case the reconciliation didn't take. The situation suited Diana just fine, since it meant she and Jason had to stay away from each other, too. They hadn't spoken a word since the previous night.